The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Injuries sustained from job-related and auto accidents, as well as slip and falls, can last for your entire life. Being paid for your pain and suffering is not only deserved, but is necessary. And most importantly, it is your right. Let the law firm of Ross LaRusso Shahabian expertly, empathetically, and aggressively fight for what you deserve. My name is Tom Russo, partner at Ross LaRusso Shahabian. With over 40 years of combined experience, my partners and I have relentlessly and successfully fought for our clients' needs. Contact us at 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Do not be discouraged by your pain, and do not be discouraged by your experience with other personal injury attorneys. We are different. We are accessible to you 24 hours a day. We will keep you updated as to our progress and always fight for what you deserve. Again, our firm is Rosner Russo Shahabian, and our number is 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Stop hoping for a great settlement. Together, let us fight for one. Everybody, and welcome to Accidentally Yours. I'm your host, Tom Russo, and it is my honor and pleasure to spend some time with you today and every Thursday at 3 p.m. right here on 103.9 LI News Radio. What is our goal here? What is our mission here on Accidentally Yours? We want to inform you. We want to educate you. We want to empower you. If you've been involved in any type of accident, or you have a family member, a spouse who doesn't want to do anything about it, but you know they're injured and you know they're just trying to tough it out, but you know they're going to have something, pain, an injury for the rest of their life, we need to show you what the right steps are. Step number one, get the right lawyer. My firm is Ross LaRusso Shahabian. You can check us out at rrslawyers.com. We handle all general negligence matters, whether it's a car accident, slip, trip, or fall, nursing home negligence, construction accidents, all types of negligence cases. Well, every show we like to have a topic, and that is very important to have a special area of law that we discuss each week. We've discussed construction accidents, and we've discussed premises cases, of course, car accidents. And one very specialized area is medical malpractice. Now, this is, you might want to call it the creme de la creme of personal injury law. Not everybody can do this. In fact, most lawyers should not even attempt to do this type of law. And we have a special guest here today who's been doing it for a very long time and does it very well. Before we begin that, though, some short statistics about medical malpractice. So what is a medical malpractice case? Essentially, it's a doctor, a physician, a hospital who made a mistake. And it's not just a matter of you got a bad result. It's not that's not the standard, as we'll learn later. It has to be a departure from good medical practice. And these cases are very hard to prove sometimes. So you need the right lawyer to do that. And our guest will tell you exactly what lawyer you need to actually help you with that type of case. It's estimated that approximately 195,000 patients die in hospitals each year because of preventable mistakes. That's preventable mistakes. And in fact, the top five malpractice allegations out there are misdiagnosis, that accounts for about 33% of cases, botched surgeries, about 23%, mistreatment, 18%, obstetrics, 10%, and others, including medication errors and anesthesia errors, about 10%. In fact, the statistics show that between 2003 to 2017, the most common source for claims was diagnostic errors. So what's going on here? Well, I think our next guest is going to be able to shed some light on that. Please welcome to the program, Mr. Mike Duffy from Duffy & Duffy. Welcome to the show, Mr. Duffy.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. I can tell you, Mike, I can call you Mike?
Of course.
Fantastic. I love the fact that my firm partners up and has a team out there. We do not handle medical malpractice cases. We wouldn't even dream of doing it because it is a very specialized area and you have to know what you're doing. And in fact, you have a great story. I know your whole family story. So why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself, your experience in the firm?
Well, again, thank you for having me and discussing this topic today. The firm is Duffy & Duffy. We're based in Uniondale, although we practice throughout the state. And one of the reasons we practice throughout the state is, as you said, med mal is a very particular and specialized area of law. There are any number of lawyers who will tell you they do medical malpractice, but most of them generally don't know how to spell medical malpractice. So
true.
The firm started in 1996. I was a lawyer I had just left law school shortly before that, and I started the law firm and was knocking around learning the tricks of the trade and learning about medical malpractice. My father at that time was a partner in a firm in Manhattan, specializing in medical malpractice, and my father was probably one of the best that ever practiced in this area. His firm had begun breaking up, and he let me know that he was going to come out to Long Island and start a law firm specializing in medical malpractice. And I let him know that that was a bad idea because there was already a kid named Duffy doing exactly that on Long Island, and that right. was not going to work out well for me. So he, in his nicest fashion, said, "Too bad." So I did what anybody would do, any Irish kid would do in that circumstance. I called my mother, and I asked her to fix this, and she did.
Thank you, Mom.
Yes, indeed. So we wound up partnering up, and we were blessed to have my dad until December of 19. He passed away. He was 83 years old, and he had hit on a verdict in Nassau County 3 months before that or 2 months before that. So he went out doing exactly what he loved. So the firm specializes in medical malpractice. We have 15 lawyers. And our focus is really on the entire portion of the case. Everything, of course, has to work perfectly. But the most important thing that we try to focus on is the investigation phase. We want to make sure two things. One, that we're not leading a potential client down the wrong path. We're not giving them hope that's not there. And we're not bringing doctors into cases that they don't belong in. We want to make sure we're right. So when we choose to put a case into suit, we are 100% right. Because we have done everything there is. We have investigated every aspect. We've dug through every medical record. We've spoken with experts. We've retained experts. When we put a case in suit, we're right. And so then we move those things forward. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a very special area of expertise that fortunately the teams we have at Duffy & Duffy are able to bring that expertise to bear.
And it's amazing, and you brought it up. Our listeners probably think all the work is done in the courtroom. Well, that's the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
There were years and years and hours that are put into these cases as well as money.
Absolutely.
Why don't you give out your website information,
sure.
your email address. The firm is Duffy & Duffy.
Firm is Duffy & Duffy, and the website is www.duffyduffylaw.com. And I am at mduffy@duffyduffylaw.com. The office number is 516-394-4200.
And Mike, you handle cases all throughout the five boroughs,
Absolutely.
Long Island.
Absolutely. We chose to practice on Long Island as a work-life balance
sure.
scenario.
That's nice here.
It's fantastic here. I have five children. When we started the firm, this iteration of the firm, my children were young, and I wanted to and was a part of their life as they grew. And that would have been more challenging if I was based in the city. And my father lived on the east end of the island, so the city was would have been a hard press for him coming out from the end of the island. So we chose to live here to have our office here. We have offices in Manhattan if we need to use them. And you know, the work is done in a courtroom, as you say. So
yep.
you know, we go wherever we need to be to make sure we represent our client.
That's it. And you mentioned, too, you have a strong team behind you. You actually have nurses on staff.
We do. We have several nurses on staff. We have, as I said, we have 15 lawyers, and all of our lawyers are well-experienced in medical malpractice. Nobody, you know, is a newbie or doesn't know what they're doing. We do occasionally have young lawyers that come in and work with us, but they work with a senior level person or a partner, and
right.
they're learning how to go through the process themselves. We have nurses on staff. We have relationships with medical experts throughout the country that we're able to talk to, and we're able to to elicit opinions from and learn the medicine, right? It's not just enough to have a doctor tell you that this is a case or it's not a case. Yep. You have to know this medicine, and you have to be able, the way we always describe it is you have to be able to cross-examine a Harvard-educated doctor in his area of specialty. And in order for you to do that, or her area of specialty, and in order for you to do that, you have to know the medicine cold.
Amazing. It is. And we spoke about this offline, that as a medical malpractice lawyer, you need to know that medicine as well, if not even better than the doctors. We're talking about medical malpractice today. That's our topic of the day. This is a very specialized area. Lawyers don't specialize, but they can limit their practice, and they can have lawyers that's what they do. This is not a hobby doing this, folks. No. You're going against doctors who we know. And if a doctor messes up, as we're going to get into, it's bad. Yes. The damages can be catastrophic. Back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody, to Accidentally Yours. I'm your host, Tom Russo. Our topic of the day, medical malpractice. One of the toughest areas of the law out there to practice. You have to have experience. You have to have a law firm that has the resources. These cases are very expensive to litigate. There are high numbers at stake. You have doctors' reputations at stake sometimes, too. And let's face it, if a doctor messes up, and they do, thankfully, most of them get it right most of the time. And we have one of the best health systems out there. But they do make mistakes. And if someone is injured as a result, or a family member suffers because of it, they're entitled to fair and reasonable compensation. That's what our system says. My guest here today, Mike Duffy of Duffy and Duffy. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you. I'd like to know if that's you playing the piano.
You know what? That's actually one of our associates, David Urone. He is just an unbelievable maestro, a man of many talents. No, that's actually the theme from The Firm, if you remember,
right?
From years ago.
Right. That's right. Yeah? That's right.
Absolutely. So, Mike, we got into the background, and I think that's very important. I mean, people don't realize that these cases, as soon as someone walks in, even the smaller case, it's $50,000 before you even get the trial.
Easily. You got to remember, everybody you're talking to is an expert, a nurse, anybody you're talking to is at the highest level of their profession. So their time is going to be paid for.
And what we mean by that is the law firm itself is going to extend that money in order to just investigate your case.
That's right.
So there's a lot at stake here. So what I'd like to give to our audience, and hopefully they're never the victims of medical malpractice, hopefully their family members or friends are never victims of medical malpractice, but they have rights. They need to know them. They need to know what the process is. So the first question I'm going to ask you, Mike, is what advice would you give to individuals out there if they themselves, a family member or a friend, is a victim of medical malpractice, or they feel that they are? What should they do?
Well, for starters, they should do everything they can to help their loved one heal. Right. To make sure that another medical professional is looking into the situation and making sure that there's treatment that's being rendered. If you've reached the point where you're now looking or considering a lawsuit, then you got to start thinking about the things you might naturally think about in a lawsuit. Who are you going to be your witnesses? Right. Yep. So there are going to be nurses around. There are going to be doctors around. There are going to be social workers around. Get those names. Know who those people are. Don't try to figure it all out on your own. Right. This is a very specialized area of law. And in today's world, there's a lot more information available to people through the internet and other things.
Sure.
Don't try to become an investigator in this stuff. These are very detailed issues. So get that. The witnesses. Keep a time log. Important information, not your opinions or your thoughts, but the facts that occurred as they occurred.
So important. So
that you can look back on it, you can remember. You know, memories become hazy as time develops or time goes on, and you start to think that you remembered something a particular way, and then you look at a set of fact or a record and you say, my goodness, that's not exactly the way I remember it being. And certainly talk to a lawyer who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't have to be us, although I think it should, but
I agree.
Make sure it's a lawyer who knows what they're doing. There are a lot of lawyers out there. They'll put on their website that they're medical malpractice experts. Make sure they know
Correct.
That they know what they're doing, that they have a track record of success, and they're known in the community. Get the guidance of that lawyer as to what you should be doing. Obtaining the medical records is vitally important. You know,
yes.
Medical malpractice is the only area of law that I'm aware of where the proposed defendant creates the evidence in terms of the record,
right.
maintains that evidence, and then gets on a witness stand and interprets that evidence. So getting that record so that we have access to it early is vitally important.
Mike, are you trying to suggest that there's been occasions where doctors actually change their records in anticipation of litigation?
I would never go so far as to directly accuse anyone, but we've had many of those cases in our career.
Little whiteout. Back in the day, we used whiteout, right?
Back in the day, there were a lot of different things. There were a lot of electronic medical records.
Add some extra notes after the fact, right?
And sometimes on sheets of paper that were published long after the events, but... Now we have electronic medical records. It's much easier to track if those things happen. And frankly, you know, it's a crime. So hopefully it's not being done.
Hopefully not. I'm going to play off of one thing you said, which I feel is very important. Speak to an attorney immediately if you suspect it.
Yeah.
Again, don't try and figure it out. And like you said, one of the reasons is because the attorney can guide you and tell you exactly what to do. You can stop the thinking and you can just listen and hear what your rights are and hear what you should do. The other thing is time limitations. These cases have time limitations, Mike.
Sure. So the standard time limitation is 2.5 years from the date of the malpractice, but it can be as short as 90 days.
Yeah.
If you're suing a municipality, Nassau County, Suffolk County, the state of New York has time limitations. There are any number. If any of your listeners are from the city, the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation owns, I think it's 13 hospitals throughout the city. They're a 90-day window. You have to get a notice of claim filed within 90 days. So you want to really make sure that you're speaking to a lawyer early. And particularly, you know, you made reference to the $195,000 deaths that are estimated. That's an estimate that comes from medical providers. That's not lawyers estimating that. That's not
Correct.
Insurance people estimating that. That was a study commissioned by doctors, and they commissioned it to prove that there was no malpractice, that it was all overblown. And that study came out and showed, oh my goodness, not is it overblown, it's understated.
Yeah.
And that number, if you think about that number, it's the equivalent, you know, of a passenger jet going down every day in terms of the number of people that pass. So it's really something you want to make sure that you're talking to somebody who knows what they're doing. Hospitals will frequently, if it's a hospital case, will frequently try to discuss the case with you early to try to get you to take something very low in terms of a resolution. They're not doing that to be your friend. They're not doing that to try to help you. They're doing that to help them. You know, you always have to remember that the people that are representing doctors and hospitals are doing, they're very professional people. They're doing a great job, but they're representing a particular party. They're not your friends.
Sometimes if things go wrong, you meet the person from the risk management department. All of a sudden, this person doesn't have a white coat on.
No.
They've got a clipboard and they're a little bit nervous.
And they, you know, they come in and behave as though they're your best friend and they're there to help you, and you're in a moment of heightened anxiety and stress, and you might think in terms of you know, following their advice, and their advice is there to protect them, not you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Mike, we talked about the importance of what an individual should do at the very outset.
Yeah.
And we talked about time limitations, which are very important. So now one of the specialized things in medical malpractice cases is to actually prove a case, you actually have to have an expert, correct?
Right. Yeah. So the New York State requires, and it's a good requirement, it requires that before a case is put into suit, that a certificate of merit is filed. And that certificate says that a medical professional has said that there is evidence of malpractice in this particular case, and it's a case of merit. That requires the lawyer to know everything about that file and be able to present that file to an expert and be able to have a conversation on a level with that expert that it is a peer-to-peer conversation, not a student-teacher conversation. It's got to be that you're talking the same language and you're having the conversation that's best going to help your client.
Yes.
And in order to do that, you have to have certainly the knowledge and the experience. You have to have the connections. You have to have the resources to connect with these physicians. And you know, that's a particular area in the law. No, I'm not aware of any other area of the law that requires that.
Certainly not at that early stage.
Right.
And that sets the tone for the rest of the case, because presumably that expert is going to give you a yes or no, whether the doctor or individual departed from what's the standard?
You're looking for a departure from the accepted standards of medical care and treatment. And that is a community standard, right? It is what does the community say should happen in a particular circumstance. And the departure simply means that you as a physician have failed to meet that community standard.
So what we're saying is, it's not about did you get a bad result, okay?
Correct.
Bad results happen,
yes,
even in surgeries that went the right way.
Correct.
But the question is, did that doctor actually depart from good and accepted medical practice?
That's the question.
You're listening to Mike Duffy from Duffy and Duffy. He's been doing this, what, over 26 years, Mike?
It seems longer.
Check out his website, see exactly what they do. You have to get the right people. Back after these messages. Injuries sustained from job-related and auto accidents, as well as slip and falls, can last for your entire life. Being paid for your pain and suffering is not only deserved, but is necessary. And most importantly, it is your right. Let the law firm of Ros LaRusso Shahabian expertly, empathetically, and aggressively fight for what you deserve. My name is Tom Russo, partner at Ros LaRusso Shahabian. With over 40 years of combined experience, my partners and I have relentlessly and successfully fought for our clients' needs. Contact us at 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Do not be discouraged by your pain, and do not be discouraged by your experience with other personal injury attorneys. We are different. We are accessible to you 24 hours a day. We will keep you updated as to our progress and always fight for what you deserve. Again, our firm is Ros LaRusso Shahabian, and our number is 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Stop hoping for a great settlement. Together, let us fight for one. Welcome back, everybody, to Accidentally Yours. I'm your host, Tom Russo. If you like the show, we'd love to hear from you. Go check out my website at rrslawyers.com or give us a call at 516-376-0000. That's 516-376-0000. Our topic today, medical malpractice. 195,000 patients die in hospitals each year because of, now here's the key term, preventable mistakes. Preventable mistakes made by doctors. Good doctors that most of the time get it right, but do occasionally make mistakes.
Absolutely, like anybody else, right? Good people doing good work and errors occur. The unfortunate part of the process is that when doctors make errors, typically people become severely injured.
Yeah.
Every patient that we have is going to see a doctor, or every client we have is going to see a doctor in the first place. So there's already some problem, some issue that has brought the patient to that doctor. So when that doctor then unfortunately makes an error, it's compounding an already complicated situation and typically results in a tragic result.
I gotta imagine, Mike, that a lot of these mistakes happen because of the long hours, the fatigue, the understaffing. I mean, they're trying to do the right job, but sooner or later, you're seeing hundreds upon hundreds of patients per year. Something's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, medicine is not what it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, right? It's it is a business, right? I mean, we were talking off air about the billboards throughout the city for medical providers, for hospitals. They're trying to draw in business. This is a business.
Correct.
And that business requires physicians to do certain things in certain time periods and to be profit centers, and they're going to go through things. I don't think it's currently the case, but there was a time not that long ago where for a radiologist to be profitable, he or she had to read a film every 16 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Which of course you're going to miss things,
absolutely,
right? I mean, that's going to happen. So yeah, these are good people that are super well trained, super smart, fantastic human beings for the most part, who have simply made an error.
And that's it. And that's why we have a system. That's also, by the way, why we have insurance policies. That's it.
Correct.
It's the cost of doing business. Mike, I'd like to get to some common cases.
Sure.
So I mentioned a few. As I said, from the statistic, misdiagnosis seems to be a very big one. What other common cases does your firm handle?
Well, I mean, diagnosis is the key to all of it, right? So ultimately, whether it's a surgical error or it's a film that's been misread or whatever it is, it's about diagnosing what happened to this patient. So a misdiagnosis can mean a lot of different things. We see a lot of failure to diagnose cancer cases.
Yes.
Obviously, the doctor did not give the patient the cancer. But if there's a, for instance, a lung cancer case and there was a chest film done and there is evidence on that film that should have given rise to suspicion for cancer, that might be a case. Similarly, a mammography that maybe was misread in a breast cancer situation. So we see a lot of those sorts of cases. We see a good number of children who are neurologically impaired as a result of malpractice at birth. This can result in cases such as cerebral palsy, Erb's palsy, things of that nature. Terribly sad and difficult cases, very challenging medicine. But again, if you're a lawyer in a firm that has handled these for a long time, and knows what you're doing, you get through those. A failure to refer to a specialist is a significant one. You know, we all love our general practitioner, our primary care physician, and we generally believe, and correctly so, that this physician is doing the best he or she can under the circumstances. But if you're there and, you know, there's a set of facts that develop, perhaps for a man, evidence of a prostate enlargement that maybe needs to be looked into. And of course, prostate cancer is a terrible plague in our society these days. But, you know, a failure to refer that patient on to another physician is a problem. And we do see quite a bit of prescription drug errors. And that's a lot of going to a pharmacy, again, another business. And with, you know, things have to move and move rapidly. And maybe you get the wrong prescription, and that leads to some problems. So we see a lot of different things. There's no one area that I could say is the most significant other than generically the idea of a failure to diagnose, a misdiagnosis on all of the different things. We see also a lot of surgical errors. We get a lot of calls for surgical errors. Surgical errors are challenging cases because only that physician is looking into the body and performing that surgery, and where intuiting certain things from the evidence and from how the case went. But at the end of the day, that surgeon is the only one looking in that body. So those can be challenging cases.
And again, it's not necessarily a case. If you got a bad result, the question is always going to be whether or not he deviated from that standard of care.
So you're looking for a deviation from the standard of care. You're 100% right that a bad result, which happens frequently, you know, we will often get calls on plastic surgical cases and there's a bad result. That bad result does not equate to malpractice necessarily. You have to show that the physician has departed from the accepted standards of care. You also have to show that the outcome is not an acceptable risk of the surgery or an accepted risk of the surgery or of the procedure being done. There are tremendous numbers of risk affiliated with every kind of medical care. And that you wound up with one of those risks does not necessarily rise to the level of malpractice.
Right. In fact, you touched on what I was going to ask you. Let's change hats a minute, sure. Okay? We're not on the plaintiff's side, and yet you're a defense attorney, and sure. So, I think we can agree these are also some of the best trial attorneys out there, these attorneys who defend these doctors.
Yeah, our experience is that the medical malpractice defense bar are some of the best lawyers in the industry.
So you mentioned risk of the procedure. So real simple, colonoscopy, puncture sure. the colon, risk sure. of the procedure.
It's a risk of the procedure, yeah.
Most of the time, not a case.
Never a case. Where you might have a case is where there is evidence that there was a puncture and nothing has been done about it, that there is a failure to treat that, identify that puncture and treat that puncture, and that leads to significant event. But the mere happening of the puncture is almost certainly not a case.
Informed consent whenever anybody is about to. This is the funny thing. I remember when my wife was giving birth. In walks in the anesthesiologist.
Right.
About, and while he's doing the epidural, she's signing the paper, which I presume was a...
And it was probably an informed consent.
Probably
form,
an informed
right?
consent.
Where somebody's rushing through, maybe not even saying anything, but frequently rushing through a series of things, and you're in a difficult situation. You're not really listening.
Right.
So, is there really any actual informed consent? So, there is a cause of action, a case for a lack of informed consent. That is that you would not have given consent for this procedure or for this surgery or for this whatever had you known about this risk or that risk. These are very, very, very difficult cases to win. You have to always bear in mind that this surgery is typically needed. So some perceived risk, some low percentage risk that could happen and you happen to wind up with it, it's the argument is not now that I know it happened to me, I would have said no to the surgery. It has to be that had I been aware of the risk at that time, I would have said no to the surgery. So, would I not have had that quadruple bypass if I had known there was a risk of infection? Well, of course you're going to have the bypass. It's going to save your life. So, these are difficult cases, but it does exist. Yes.
So on my firm side of it, we on the general negligence arena, of course, contributory negligence comes up all the time. Did our client do something wrong?
Right.
I suppose on the medical malpractice end as well, whether they failed to give important facts during a history, what else?
Well, the single biggest thing is sort of the recalcitrant patient, right?
Right.
It's somebody who's told you need to go to an oncologist or you need to go to, whatever, and have a film done or whatever it may be, and then they don't go. Or you need to be on this medication, and then they don't take the medication. And then they want to say the doctor didn't. He didn't diagnose my hypertension and that led to a heart attack. Well, you didn't take the medicine. People correctly believe they have a right to walk out of a hospital against medical advice if that's their choice. And they do have that right. But if they walk out of the hospital and they don't get treated and then something bad happens, it's not the hospital who did it. It's the individual.
Mike Duffy with us today. The topic, medical malpractice. You got to have the firm that does this. And has the lawyers, has the staff, and the resources. Mike, give us the firm's information again.
Again, we're www.duffyduffylaw.com. And I am at mduffy@duffyduffylaw.com.
Back after these messages. Back right here on 103.9 LI News Radio. The program is Accidentally Yours. I'm your host, Tom Russo. We love to bring on individuals who have a passion for what they do, who are successful at what they do, who have the resources, who have the firms, who have the strength behind them. And it's an honor and privilege today to have Mike Duffy, who is just a consummate professional in the area of medical malpractice for decades at this point. Welcome back again, Mike.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we have gone over the basics of medical malpractice, many challenges, very expensive, and you got to have some good, tough lawyers to do this. Yeah. But we got some questions for you, Mike, if you want to take those.
Fire
and
on.
With us in the studio now is RRS's own David Yaron.
Hey,
welcome,
Tom.
David.
Hey, how are you? How are you? How's everybody
hey,
doing?
David, how are you?
Good. We love having David on the program. He's always got insights for us. He sees it from another perspective, too. He was actually working for a defense firm, so he knows the defense side of this as well.
Yeah, not only that, I actually had a few cases with Mr. Duffy's office, and he's Mr. Duffy until I die, because when you have a website that has verdicts of, you know, 109 million or something ridiculous like that on the website, yeah. It's Mr. Duffy. When we used to get a summons and complaint from his office, we were quaking and shaking in our boots. They do a great job. So,
well, thank you for that.
Definitely. But I do have some questions I'd love to ask, and I know people ask me these questions. I'd love to hear your perspective.
Sure.
So one question I'm sure you get all the time is, how much is my case worth?
Well, we do. That's pretty much the first question everybody asks. And the reality is that any lawyer who answers that question in an early phase of the case is lying to you.
Mm.
Nobody knows. Every case rises and falls on its own merit. Every fact pattern is different. You know, how long someone has sustained the injury for. You know, there are things like earnings that go into certain, you know, the calculations, particularly for death actions. Every single case is different. And all of the information that we spend months and years coordinating and highlighting and prosecuting with your case all factors into what that case is worth. How significant is the malpractice? Is it, you know, a slam dunk, or is it something that's going to be contested hotly? You know, what kind of witness are you as a plaintiff? Everybody thinks they're wonderful, and there are some folks who just do not do well in front of a jury,
right?
On both the plaintiff and the defense side. So all of those things factor into it. At the end of the day, the most important thing you have to do is to trust your lawyer. The lawyer is not, certainly not a Duffy and Duffy. Nobody is going to try to force you into a resolution that is not adequate for the case. We frequently run into clients who refuse to accept our advice, and that creates a problem. But certainly the only advice we're going to give you is the maximum value that we believe we can sustain for your case.
Sure.
I'll tell you one thing. I remember being in the Bronx one day.
Sure.
And sure enough, I see the Duffy crew there. You guys have like your own specialized equipment to haul your evidence in these big, giant, roller-wheeled boxes, black with Duffy. Yeah. If I saw those things as a defense attorney in the Bronx, that's intimidating.
Well, you know, everybody relies more and more on technology. And as times have developed, those boxes have gotten smaller
because
the technology's
gotten
smaller. But yeah, when we go to trial, it's, you know, all hands on deck, and we put in every effort necessary to win the case.
Not a game. There's people's,
game.
I mean, a lot of these times, they're death cases.
Yes.
Or something significant has happened to a family member where this is going to affect everybody for the rest of their lives.
Right.
So you got to have the right lawyers, and you got to have lawyers that are willing to take on what seems to be a very difficult task. So here's my question. I alluded to a little bit. Mike, what are some of the challenges that you face when you're presented with a jury, and now here they are, they're off the street, they have no medical training whatsoever, and there's a doctor who's being accused of oftentimes doing something horrific, and he's been practicing for 40, 50 years. How in the heck are they supposed to figure this out? What type of challenges have you seen?
Well, I mean, that's a tremendous challenge, really, because jurors try to do the very best thing they can do, right? Jurors are universally well-intentioned people, but they're being asked, as you say, to pass judgment in a very specialized area of medicine that they probably have no familiarity with. And the key is really the presentation of the evidence and the application of logic and common sense, because that jury, the reason they're being asked to sit in here in a medical malpractice case is not for them to become medical experts. It's for them to be able to digest the information and use their common sense and remove from the process their natural inclination to protect the doctor and protect the medical provider because they like their medical provider. In fact, there was a study not long ago of jurors in medical malpractice cases where the conclusion was that most jurors at the beginning of a case view the doctor as the victim in the case. And that's a preconceived notion that a lot of jurors have. So it is a tremendous challenge to get people to understand that we're not asking you to become doctors. We're asking you to bring the common sense that allows you to function every minute of the day when know when someone's misleading you or when someone's giving you a falsehood, and to know when something just doesn't make sense. And if the plaintiff's firm presents their evidence properly, their case should make perfect sense. And if the defense firm tries to do their job properly, they should be providing a logical explanation and not just relying upon your sympathies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, going over all that, I've been to your website recently, and I think it's something like $800 million plus worth of verdicts and settlements. So clearly, you know what you're doing. You know what kind of jurors are out there. You know, another question, Mr. Duffy, I'd want to know is, people always ask, how long do these lawsuits take? What do you say to somebody that asks how long a lawsuit like this is going to take?
A long time.
Mm-hmm. You just tell them.
Yeah. I mean, so if you're retaining us to investigate your case, the investigation phase itself is going to take a very long time. We're not just spitballing. We're not guessing. We do a completely thorough investigation, and we're perfectly content to take as much time as the law provides us to make sure we get it right. So that when we're sitting and trying to move our case forward, we've done all the legwork already. But there are inherent delays built into the court system that we have no control over. And in these cases, you're also scheduling the depositions of doctors who are frequently very busy and providing medical care. Or, you know, we had a particular defendant that did about 6 tours in Iraq, and getting him to testify was seemingly minuscule relative to what he was doing, and wonderful that he did that. But so that those delays came in and certainly affected the system. And then once you've gone through everything you need to do, now you get on a list with everybody else who's done everything they need to do, and you have to wait for a trial judge to be available to take your case, and then you get through your trial. So it can take a very long time. There's no real time frame I can give you, but the average case is 5 to 7 years in medical malpractice.
Sure. So let me ask you, what do you and the lawyers ask for when you're in court? What can these people recover for their injuries in medical malpractice?
So, you know, obviously I wouldn't give you a dollar figure to that
right,
answer,
of course,
as
of course,
I already said,
course.
Right? But you're asking for the jury to award a number that is a fair number that represents compensation for what has occurred, and a fair number in today's world, right? So there are types of cases where the relative valuation as established by the courts hasn't been revisited in 100 years, and that becomes problematic. So you're looking at today's world, and you're asking in today's world to award a reasonable and fair compensation. The thing to remember, always to remember, is that this system isn't about getting rich or anything like that. The system is designed because a wrongdoer, in our case a doctor, has taken something from a plaintiff, an arm, a leg, a life, whatever it may be, has taken that from them, and there's no way to replace it other than our system says dollar figures.
Got it.
Mike, what an incredible presentation you've given us. You've given us so much information. The firm is Duffy & Duffy. Give us the website. Give us the information.
www.duffyduffylaw.com. I'm Mike Duffy, and I can be reached at mduffy@duffyduffylaw.com. 516-394-4200. Thank you
both
very much.
Thank you so much, Mike. Everybody's got their cell phone in their hands right now. Just Google Duffy and Duffy. Check out the reviews. See what these guys do. You need the best. You need the best. You just heard one of the best. And if you have a general negligence matter, whether it's a trip and fall, a car accident, any type of construction accident, nursing home negligence, we want you to check us out at rrslawyers.com. Remember, folks, success is no accident.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.